Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. This show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative.
This episode is sponsored by Police Mortgage. Police Mortgage is a full-service mortgage company dedicated to serving police officers and first responders. Founded in 2008, Police Mortgage offers a variety of mortgage products tailored to meet the needs of those who serve and protect. Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none.
I am Kent Bader, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and I have a busy guest today. You know, no kidding. Yeah, we got on early, you know, definitely more so than on time, and we were delayed because my guest was working hard to help another first responder out there, and I have a lot of respect for that. My guest, his name is Ryan Gillespie. He is a treatment advocate for Rescue Recovery Centers of America at Raritan Bay. I don't even know what Raritan Bay is, but I'm sure we're going to find out. He's also a retired police officer and a former Marine. We really appreciate your service, and thank you for being a guest on the show, Brian.
Hey, Ken, thank you very much. I do have to correct you one time there.
Sure.
But there are no such thing as a former Marine. I am a Marine Corps veteran. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
There you go. You know what? I'll take that, because as somebody who was never in the military and isn't stupid but ignorant, I need to know that kind of stuff. So
never,
I appreciate
never. I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate you giving me this avenue today and the time. And you got to see a little bit about how I work and what happens. We don't get to call the time when we're going to be able to help someone. We don't get to pick that time. We don't get to pick who it is. It's when they reach out, we have to, you know, that moment of clarity, we have to jump right in. So speaking of jumping right in, so my name is Brian Gillespie, and I am a retired police officer from Manasquan Police Department in New Jersey. I'm also a Marine Corps veteran, as we just stated. I served in the Marine Corps from 1982 to 1983 in beautiful, sunny Southern California at Camp Pendleton at 1st Tank Battalion, and it was a great experience in my life. But maybe that's part of the reason why I'm here today. As part of the accomplishments I have had in the Marine Corps and the police department, I am also have over 8.5 years of recovery. So I'm pretty proud about that, because not what I've been able to do for myself and my family, what I'm able to do for others. And I never realized that until I was able to get sober myself. So having a platform like this is great, Ken, and I really appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, yeah, it's truly my pleasure. And as you know, many of the folks in my audience know, you know, I have, you know, nearly 4 years of recovery from alcohol. So I understand, you know, what you're going through. And I also understand too, I think that this is a little off the cuff, and absolutely positively no disrespect for those that have been sober with some very significant time, 20 years, 30 years. But I think getting sober and staying sober over the course of COVID and a lot of the other chaos that we've had over the last number of years, yeah, speaks to something. And so when these folks are coming to you or I, you know, that, you know, are just trying to get sober or just have a couple of months, you know, I think that there's a little bit of an understanding of, you know, what you're dealing with in order to stay sober in these times.
Yeah. And that's a great point. So, you know, we're supposed to identify and relate. We don't judge.
Yeah. Right?
So especially with that first responder, he wants to be able for someone to listen to him, number one. And he wants someone to understand where he's coming from. And for a lot of first responders, myself including in my story, you know, I didn't trust or didn't want to talk to many people about that. And I found the first responder. I was 3 weeks sober. When I did get sober, I had a sponsor from day one. But 3 weeks in, I know I ran into someone who I knew was sober. And he had told me about Bottles and Badges. Now, Bottles and Badges was like law enforcement and paid fire in New Jersey. It was their our meetings, and it was just us. And I was like, that's what I need, because I didn't like going to regular meetings. And so I'm able to understand what it's like for them when they come in and said, listen, you know, I know I drink 18 gallons of vodka a day, but I'm not like anybody else. I'm like, no, you're not. You know, you'll find out, but I understand what you mean by that. And where it's very difficult for us to get vulnerable, right? And to do that in people that, you know, you're supposed to, you know, you see every day. You see their children in school. You're locking up their family members. Very difficult. But when you're seeing other law enforcement officers or other first responders, you allow that guard to get down. And for me, you know, I didn't get sober until I was like 51, and I still wasn't letting that guard down. It took me 11 months. I went one day a week. I went to Bottles and Badges, 35 miles from my house, because I didn't want anybody around here to know. And I went every Monday night religiously, and I got a great foundation. And I had a sponsor that every day we talked from day one when I surrendered. And I worked the program with him in my whole 11 months of sobriety. I knew everything by that time, you know. I ran into a friend of mine and said, hey, I want you to try this men's meeting. I go, hey, that sounds great. He said, yeah, it's on Sunday mornings. I said, perfect. I'm an early riser, you know. So where's it at? He goes, it's in Manasquan. Yeah, my son goes to that school. My wife went to that school. I was a police officer in that town. I'm not doing it. You know, and that's where that vulnerability, that's where, like, well, you know, 11 months of sobriety I had, and I thought I knew everything and worked the program. I still wasn't working the how, what I had learned, you know, the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness. I wasn't willing to go the extra length. You know, and I joke about it for that week. I told my sponsor, there's no way I'm going to that meeting. No way, because I am not like them. You know, I'm a cop. I'm a Marine. They can't know what's inside me. You know, so when we talk to that, when I talk to that person in early sobriety, I understand that. But I also understand the fact that week I told my sponsor, listen, I'm not doing it. He says, I want you to think about it. I said, OK. So I thought about it, and I did what any good natured Irish drunk Marine cop would do. That Sunday, when the meeting was going on, I drove through the parking lot looking for any cars that I recognized. that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I said everyone understands. They're like, yeah. I'm like, it wasn't right. That was my alcoholic thinking. Yeah. So I didn't recognize any cars. I came back and I told my sponsor, I'll give it a shot. So, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to know people. Mm-hmm. And he said, so you're going to know people. Did you ever think about that? They're just trying to get recovery like you are. I'm like, of course not, because I was just thinking about me.
Right.
So I went that next week, and sure as heck would pull up, and I see the guy standing in the door, and I go, I know that guy. I said, you know him? I said, I know him. So I walked up, and he said, hey, Brian. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, how much time you have? I said, I got 11 months. I got 11 months, you know? He's like, well, welcome. Come on in. And I went in there, and my worst fear had come to realization. I ran into two people, one I had arrested, one I had was involved in his arrest. And they welcomed me with open arms.
Yeah.
And it freaked me out because I wasn't ready for that. I was loaded for bear and I wanted to fight. And they welcomed me with open arms. And that was that program that was working for them that taught me, hey, they are just here for recovery. They didn't care that I was a cop. They didn't care that I was a drunk. Right. You know, they knew that I didn't know that at the time. And from that point on, like, there's people in that meeting that I would have never given a time of day to, that I looked at, oh, look at that dude, you know. But I became best of friends with some of these people. I leaned on them for guidance throughout my sobriety. And I still do, because from that day that I stepped into that room, that specific meeting, I still go every Saturday now. And I'm there probably an hour and a half early to help set up and do the stuff that I never wanted to do, because I did let it work. So I do understand what happens with early sobriety with first responders. And I understand the trepidation, but I also know what happens when you give it a shot. Because I like to think I'm living proof of that.
Yeah, you definitely are. And you're not the first person, especially military or first responder, that said, well, I'm not going to go to this meeting right by my house. I'll go, but, you know. There's it three counties over. There's a meeting. I'll go to that one.
And so now what I do with Recovery Centers of America as a treatment advocate for our Rescue First Responder Program. Rescue stands for Recovering Emergency Service Community United, which covers police, fire, EMS, corrections, 9/11 dispatchers, military and veterans. I see that. and I see that with that early sobriety, and I see what it means to them to let them. It's number one, difficult to get vulnerable and let that guard down. But number two, they're able to do it in a much more friendlier environment for them. And then we're able to, you know, have them understand what it's like to just try to get recovery with everyone else.
Are you looking for a podcast to answer some financial questions? Well, then check out the Mortgage Beat podcast, brought to you by Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none. Mortgage Beat gives insight into the home loan process specifically for police officers, firefighters, and other public safety professionals. The podcast is hosted by Police Mortgage CEO John Aritos, who has decades of experience in the mortgage industry. Check out Mortgage Beat on Spotify today.
Important question is, you know, how did you get involved with Recovery Centers of America? Did they invite you? Hey, you have this much time. You seem like you could help some people. Or was it something in yourself said, you know what, I want to do more and I want to help and so forth? How did you get involved?
I like to think it was my bubbly personality, but I found out it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, you're pretty bubbly. I feel bubbled, you know, yeah. You're
My background consists of, after I retired, I had a couple of different jobs, and I started working at Rutgers University in New Jersey here. And I started, I worked as a security officer for a couple of years. And then I found out that Rutgers had a peer support organization called Vets for Warriors. Now, Vets for Warriors was a 24/7 peer support for veterans across the country. It was a helpline where I never heard of anything like that. What's peer support, you know? So I started work for that, and it was an unbelievable concept. It was early in my sobriety, so I started to take off with that. From there, I went to go work for Cop to Cop, which was 24/7 peer support for law enforcement in New Jersey. I was a supervisor in both of those programs. Thoroughly enjoyed what I did. The people that I would come across, especially in Cop to Cop, we would help do debriefings, SISMs, those kind of things, and we would do the telephone peer support. We would also be out there in person talking with the officers and their agencies. During one of the, I guess it was early of 2021, I was presenting to the New Jersey FOP, which is a Fraternal Order of Police. And they had said, the guy who set it up says, hey, Recovery Centers of America is starting their first responder program, and they're going to be here, and they'd like to you know, they want to talk to you, because at that time, Cop to Cop, and it still is kind of like a conduit for a lot of different things for law enforcement. They had all the numbers and information like that, because can't post a lot of that stuff out there. So I had met the woman, and we sat down. We had a conversation for about an hour and a half. She was picking my brain. I was picking her brain, and we're just telling her different things, or different resources with Cop to Cop and everything else without the do you know about balls and badges? She didn't. So we had talked about that, and probably about an hour into the conversation, she puts her hand on my shoulder and says, how do I hire you? I said, you know, I'm not interested right now. I said, let's get you going. Let's get you moving and get everything up and running, and let's go from there. So 2 weeks later, I had reached out to her, and I said, I'd like to set up a tour for myself and some other guys from Balls and Badges, which we did. And the place was phenomenal. You know, very clean, beautiful building. Met some of the people involved. They set us down, told us what their plan was for rescue. And 2 weeks after that, I reached out to her and I said, I may be at a crossroads. You know, are you looking to hire someone? And from there, as they say, the rest is history. So the building itself was there. It's a former nursing home. So it's the way that it's situated clinically worked out perfect. But it's a regular rehabilitation facility. What they did is they took a wing on the third floor and they made that rescue. So all those first responders sleep together, they eat together, they do groups together, they have a first responder therapist, and they do everything together. Now, there are a lot of people that don't like that concept, and they think that everyone should be like in Gen Pop or whatever, but, you know, sometimes it works, but most time we found out that it doesn't, and for them to get recovery and for them to be vulnerable and let that guard down like we talked about, that first responder community was definitely paramount for their recovery. And June 7th of 2021, we opened the doors for that rescue with four first responders. And that was my first day. Now, I don't believe in coincidences. It just happened to be my first day that they opened rescue. And I like to believe that I was there for a reason. So come today, you know, here we are, whatever date it is. We are closely approaching 300 first responders that have come through those doors to seek recovery. And even though that is an amazing number and that we have made an impact, it hasn't even scratched the surface because of so many first responders I know that are still struggling and so many first responders that go out of state or go to other locations. I've said this before, you know, I don't care if you come to me or not. I'd love for you to come to me so I can help be a part of your recovery, but I just want to make sure you get recovery. So if you want to go somewhere, I'll help you get to that facility. I'll help to get wherever it is that can help you get recovery. Please let me be a part of that. And then we also, like, for people who are out of state, we help facilitate the IOP meetings, which is, we have a full rescue IOP, just first responders, and also aftercare with first responder meetings and different bottles and badges meetings that guys like myself didn't want to be with everybody else in the beginning, but would go to those type of meetings. And if they didn't, they wouldn't be going to any meeting. So
Right. Giving
them some sort of option or any type of option is important.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd mentioned the facility, and I think the most critical question is it like Cliffside Malibu? Do you have like ocean and a jacuzzi and all that other kind of stuff?
So what we do is we have a pool.
that was actually my attempt at a joke, and you didn't even laugh at it, man. That means you're truly a listener, man. There's no judgment.
So each floor has their own pool. Each room has a masseuse. We have elephants and giraffes. We have a nice safari upstairs, like a little jungle for everybody. No, and that's a great question. But you also bring up the way that you said that is great, because I tell people, you can get recovery in a basement of a Bronx tenement building, or you can get recovery in Malibu, California, paying $100,000 a year to get recovery. The recovery is in yourself. We offer recovery to you, and it's incumbent upon you to take everything that's offered to you, no matter where you are, and to take that and work your own program. You know, everyone's journey is different, and that's what I love about this program. You may have similarities with me, and you may look at something different, and that's your journey. And I can't judge you on that journey. I may be able to help you down this path or that path, but you can get recovery anywhere you want as long as you want it, because the support is there. The support is there, especially for the first responders, because I'm going to tell you, it was tough enough for me to surrender. And I think for me is this guy I surrendered to technically was and had become my best friend. And I was comfortable enough in my own skin to tell him that. I was not comfortable to tell others that, which is why I would hide when certain other things would come up. Or if I went to a meeting, a local meeting, I would run across the street so no one saw me in front of that building, you know? So I fought that stigma for the longest time, you know, those first 11 months, technically, even after that. But for me to start to, it took me a long time to realize that I was making an impact, and I wanted no part of that. Mm-hmm. No part of it. And I'll tell you now, I wanted no part of what I have today. All I wanted to do, I had a desire to stop drinking, right? Mm-hmm. All I wanted was to stop drinking and to try and be a better person. What I have now is tenfold. I used to hear those promises and tell you, hey, that shit ain't never happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that it does happen if you let it happen. So for fighting that stigma with that first responder, and I know I'm all over the place, but that's kind of how I am. But with that stigma to that, for someone to see, hey, that I used to drink with that dude, or hey, that guy's a decent guy. He looks like, you know, he didn't get arrested. He didn't lose his house. He didn't lose his family. He didn't get a crash his car. You know, I may not have had that, but I was able to identify that sure as shit was going to be me if I had continued on my path.
Yeah. You know, so many good things, great things that you just said to unwrap. Just a couple of them, you know, one, I really appreciate, you know, what you said about recovery is inside you. And, you know, nothing against the higher power thought and so forth. And, you know, as I spoke to some other people, you know, maybe it's that higher power within me, but it's still within you. And I've heard, you know, more than one story of somebody hitting bottom and being in a hospital and saying, well, I'm just going to go home, rather than go to, say, you know, whatever rehab place it is, because it's not the nice rehab, because it's not the rehab I want to go to. And I am very, very blessed that, you know, I had a neighbor in AA that took me to AA after everything fell apart. And as I say, you know, I learned from a lot of different places, but I said, you know, at AA, if nothing else, it showed me a different path. It showed me another way. And I think especially for, and it'll lead me to a question here. I think especially for first responders, they don't necessarily need to be forced. In fact, I don't think that would ever work. But I think just to be able to see a different way, you know, and to make their own choice, I think is huge. So maybe you could speak a little bit, you know, because I have never been a first responder. I've been blessed to work with a number of first responders over decades. Yeah, why is recovery from addiction different for a first responder rather than, say, you know, a civilian?
So I was always taught in the Marine Corps, and I was taught in two police academies that I went to, you know, in a fight to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was a mindset that we had, that if put into a corner, I will fight till I die. And, you know, that never give up spirit. And once you're surrounded and involved around the community of whatever type of military service you have or a police department, to admit defeat, and I don't want to say defeat, to admit that there is something wrong with you, or that you are thinking these sort of thoughts, that's not what we're trained to do. We're trained to fight. We're trained to kill. We're trained to hurt. We're not trained to take care of ourselves. I was never trained to take care of myself. You know, I was, you know, grew up a fourth generation police officer, military family. You know, I was, you know, never let anyone see you cry. Never let anyone see the inside of you that you have, you know, Don't watch Bambi. You ain't gonna cry. You know, if you're gonna do whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was brought up with. And in the police department, even the Marine Corps, it was a rite of passage to be the drunk, to get drunk, to do something stupid. It was the rite of passage in the police department to work a midnight shift and go at 7 o'clock and drink the day away. So those things. But the guy who said, "Hey, I'm not feeling good," like, "I don't want to work with that dude anymore, man." You know, in the Marine Corps, even in my family, growing up, when you would hear it, you know, never trust a guy who doesn't drink. You know, that stayed with me for a long time.
Yeah.
And why not? It was just something that was passed on to someone else who repeated that. And now I repeated until it came to the point like, no, I'm a good dude. I need help.
Yeah.
You know, we're the helpers. We are not the helpies. I had a guy the other day that it was on a thread, and he said, I relapsed and I don't know what to do, but I need help. And I wrote back, I said, "Brother, you just did it. You just did it, you know?"
Yep.
And tonight I'm taking him to a meeting. You know? That's what we do. That's what it's about. Because when people get to see, for me, I saw someone that, you know, I wanted what he had. And now that guy gets to see what I do. And I had been with him before, and he had other people that were, you know, looking after him. He reached out, and it's our turn to do that. And I tell everyone, I said, "Man, you don't thank me. Just please be there for the next guy." That's how this whole thing works. The higher power thing, it happened with me. I'm a Catholic school kid. I had a whole hate with the religion. Wanted no part of it, you know, until I was told that, you know, your higher power could be that chair.
Yeah. And
for the longest time, my sponsor was my higher power. And a lot of times he still is, because I go to him for a lot, because I see what he has to offer and I see how many people he's helped. And if it wasn't for him helping me, I don't know if I'd be able to take that and translate that on. So it's the old commercial, "Then they told two friends," and so on and so on. And, you know, that's kind of like a little bit of the crux of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, like one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, you a lot of first responders here, they're trained or it's pounded into their head to be strong, you know, to help other people, you know, not cry and everything. And, you know, even though, you know, I was never a first responder, you know, I grew up Catholic. I, you know, heard all the, "Hey, be a man," you know, type of thing. and you know, you try to take care of all the, you know, all the things that are wrong with you by self-medicating and shoving it under the rug and so forth. And you know, I will fully admit that, yeah, I didn't go out and seek help until everything fell apart so much that everybody could see it. It was obvious. And then I needed to either, you know, get help or just simply, you know, live in that muck continually. So, you know, as I've stressed in other shows, yeah, I think that one of the things that holds people back, and probably especially first responders, is the fear of what everybody else is going to think. Yeah, in my case, you know, I was very fearful of, all right, if I admit I have a problem, and I knew, you know, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, I knew I had a problem for at least a year, year and a half before I started getting sober. But I always said, you know what? People are going to think that I'm a piece of crap. You know, I'm going to lose friends. I'm going to lose family. I'm going to lose clients. I'm going to lose all this stuff. And the fact is, with me, you know, I lost nobody. Yeah, everybody, after I got help and I said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm not going to drink anymore, I'm going to be in recovery and all this other stuff, every one of my friends, clients, family fell into one of two buckets. Either the bucket of, you know, hey, you know, that's brave. You need anything, you know, let me know. You know, good for you. I'm glad you're getting the help that you need. Or this other bucket, frankly, where they just kind of were apathetic about it. It's like, all right, they didn't care. They just, it's like, oh, so you're not drinking anymore. All right, fine. You know, it's not going to affect me any. You know, I'm not bothered by it or disgusted by it. You know, so, okay, you're not drinking anymore. So I think that that's important for people to hear out there, that if you have that fear, that fear may be unfounded. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, extremely unfounded. And I am proof, absolute proof of that. Because I had learned that was one of the things oh my God, how am I going to, you know, I'm gonna back up a little.
Yeah.
I play in a bagpipe band. I'm in a Marine Corps league. You know, it was part of the PBA. Anything I ever did, anything that we did was always surrounded around booze and around partying. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh my God, how am I ever going to be able to do a parade? How am I ever going to celebrate, you know, 9/11 again? And celebrate by, you know, raising a toast to my homies. And how am I ever going to be able to do stuff like that? You know, oh my God, I'm not going to have a drink at my son's wedding. Those kind of things that go through our head. Until I found out that what other people thought of me was none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I had to get myself straight. I had to get myself right for me to get my life right. And to be able to, and you talked about the two buckets, which is awesome, because there are, and I tell people this, that you're going to have the guys going to come up to you and going to say, man, you're not drinking anymore. Sucks to be you, bro. I know. You sure? Just have a drink. You'll be fine. It's not going to kill you. Or you're going to have that dude that's going to say, man, you're still not drinking? Nope. How do you do it? How did you do it? And when that, I tell them, when that happens, that's when you're going to be like, oh my God, it's my turn to try and help somebody. Right. And then those other people, they don't give a shit if you drank or not. And I used to laugh when I said it was life and death. I say, ain't no life and death. But out of those close to 300 people that have come through our program, 5 people have died because of this disease. And I got to see it firsthand. And it scares the hell out of me. And I see other people that live the life like that, that unfortunately, if they don't stop, that's what's going to happen to them. And that scares the hell out of me, because maybe I need to see that. I need to see if that person's struggling and what's happening. Because I know if I have that next drink or drug or whatever, that's going to be me, because I'm not coming back. I know I have another relapse in me. I just don't know if I have another recovery in me at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very good way of putting it. So as we begin to wrap up, because I want you to spend more time helping other people than talking to me. And I know that, you know, you're busy for the right reasons, and I really appreciate it. For anybody that may be watching or listening, that especially if they're a first responder or maybe even a first responder spouse, sitting there saying, you know, I need some help. I don't even know where to start. You know, what should I do? You know, what is the best piece of advice that you can give to them?
Brother and sister, you are not alone. It's okay not to be okay. 732-921-7411. You call me any day of the night, any day, night, it doesn't matter. Reach out to someone because someone will help you. When you think you are alone and you think you're the only one that has these problems, I'm going to tell you there is an army or a Marine Corps behind you that have that understand what day one was like, that understand what it's like to have to fight and understand that stigma and understand to keep their job and to keep their family. There are people that are willing to help you and people that have been down this road before. It's just like being a new police officer or being in boot camp. There's someone who's been there before that can help you and maybe understand it a little more. That's what we do in recovery. We help each other. That's why there are 12 steps. That's why you go back, and that's why the newer person in sobriety to me is the most important. When he raises his hand and says, you know, Jimmy, I have 5 days. Man, I remember when I had 5 days and I prayed for six and then I prayed for seven, you know, and to have that person to just say, you know what? I need help. I don't know how to get it. I just don't know what to do. So, you know what? I'm from New Jersey. We all got it. Everybody's got a guy. You know, we got a guy. You need your roof done? I got a guy. You know, I need to get my driveway done. I got a guy. Man, I need help with recovery. Yeah, I got a guy. And that guy is me. Or that guy is just so many other people out there like me that can help you either get into a program, can help you get into the rooms of AA, or it can get you into a sobriety type based program to help you save your life.
Yeah, that's a great way to close up, is that, yeah, you need recovery, I got a guy. And one of those guys is Brian Gillespie. Really, really appreciate what you're doing out there for a lot of people. As we close up, for those folks that need more information on, and let me get this right, Recovery Centers of America and what you're doing for first responders, how best can they find you and that service online out there?
Right. So the best way to get a hold of me would be my phone number, which is 732-921-7411. You could also Google Recovery Centers of America's Rescue, RESCU, first responders, or you could call 1-800-RECOVERY and you can tell them that Brian Gillespie sent you and I need help and I'm going to be there for you no matter where you are. And if I can't be there, I know people that can help you wherever you are.
Perfect.
And now one thing, I'm sorry, please. Ken, I always usually like to end on this, because it was the way that it impacted me from my first sponsor, that never underestimate the impact that you may have on someone else's life. And I never understood that until now at 8.5 years in recovery. I'm still getting phone calls from people from early on I may have helped them, or from people that have helped me that I reach out to. So by lending that hand, by saying a nice kind word, or just asking someone how they're doing, you made an impact. First responders make an impact on someone's life every day. You can run to a fire, have people coming out of a house, or you may be able to just help that young kid, you know, with a cut finger, but he remembers that you were empathetic and the mom remembers how nice you were to them. Those are the impacts that we make we just don't hear about, but continue to do it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that we have your phone number, if we need like betting advice on the Jets or the Giants or anything, can we call you on that too, like spreads and...
All right, so listen, here we go now. We didn't talk about this before, okay? But I sat in that rain yesterday as a Giants season ticket holder to watch that Jet-Giant debacle. But thanks for bringing that up. Talk about triggers. Way to go, Ken.
Sorry, man. I actually watched like a good portion of that game. You know, I'm out here in California.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that, you know, I'm a Bears fan from originally from Chicago, so I'm disappointed every year, so I don't even want to hear about it. But you know, I watched part of that, and then later on I was reading an article and said, you know, for those folks that were unfortunate to have to watch this game instead of another game or do anything else other than that. So I'm sorry, brother, that you wound up sitting there, you know, freezing your ass off in the rain, you know, watching, you know, that brand of football.
But it also comes down, and we'll end on this, how's that? Life on life's terms, right?
Exactly.
I didn't get to pick that. I have no control over that. But that's life on life's terms because I chose to sit there and watch it as a fan. I didn't choose to be unhappy. But that is truly life on life's terms.
Exactly. Well, I hope the football season gets better for both of us. But more importantly, yeah, thank you so much for what you do, Brian. Thank you for your service, and thank you for taking some time, some valuable time, to be with us here on Public Safety Talk Radio.
Hoorah, Semper Fi, Ken. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you to all of you who have either watched or listened to this episode of Public Safety Talk Radio. And we'll be back with you next week with another great guest.
Public Safety Talk Radio is produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.